The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Hey, hi, that's me. That's my name in all those buildings. I want to thank Alex K for doing that intro. Did a great job. Coming to you cordless, everybody, from the, it's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, 2:02 p.m. in Sydney, Australia, and 10 o'clock and 2 minutes here in Ilhan Omar's district in downtown Minneapolis. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night. We're not downtown, we're northeast, if you know anything about the neighborhood here. We're right across the river from downtown. With the background behind me, is actually the Stone Arch Bridge, and it's snowing. And last night, it actually did snow. It started snowing about 10 minutes before we went on the air. And there's still a little snow on the ground, and I know you care, but there's a reason they call it Minnesota. There is. I'm in a goofy mood, man. I took a nap. I fell asleep like 45 minutes ago. It's unbelievable. I set the alarm. Thank goodness. I have an alarm here that goes off 5 minutes before 10 p.m. to remind me, just in case I fall asleep, you know, to hit the button to start the countdown. Yeah, I know. Good times, huh? Okay, so what's going on here? I'll tell you what's going on here. Tonight, Jennifer Oliver O'Connell from redstate.com and asagirlturns.com, that's her, she's going to be our guest tonight. Longtime guest on my previous radio shows. Nice to bring her back into the fold. She's going to be on there about once a month. She's coming on with, by his request, Jeff Meyer did many interviews with her previously, and he asked that we bring her on a regular basis, and I couldn't agree more. So she's going to be, we're going to talk to her about Life and Times tomorrow, debate night. We got our panel. I got to tell you, I got a little bit of bad news here. Don Zurrow won't be making it. He at the last minute, he said he has to bow out. So it's going to be thus Jeff Meyer and Tim Conaway and me. We're going to talk about the debate. As soon as it's done, which is scheduled to finish at 9 p.m. Central or 10 p.m. Eastern, that's an hour before we usually start. So we're starting at 10 p.m. Eastern tomorrow night instead of 11 or you want to do the math, whatever, you know, and 9 p.m. Central. And Thursday, I'm taking off. I'm going to go see my mother. I'm going to spend the weekend with her. My wife says my 99-year-old mother has more energy than anybody she knows, and I agree. She runs circles around me. I mean, it's unbelievable. This woman, she's just like I guess I have pretty good genes. We'll see. I'm fat as hell. I'm a fat fuck, as they say in the vernacular. So I don't know if I'm going to live as long as my mother. You know, her mother lived to be 104, and same thing. Her mother was going to the market till 2 weeks before she passed away. She was up and around. So we'll find out, you know, whatever. You know, and so I'm here. So, I got confused last night. So I was talking to you about on our little intro where it says, coming to your cordless, and kind of become my introductory catchphrase. The movie's The Sure Thing from 1985. That's where that comes from. And as I said, it's one of those movie quotes that everybody's remembered wrong. It's actually not coming to your cordless. What he actually said in the movie is talking to your cordless. But I didn't remember that. I had to look, you know. Everyone seems to remember it coming to your cordless, and that's what we got going. I like the alliteration. That's what we got going on. So what happened today, December 5th, it's 2023, it's Tuesday, if you've been asleep all day long. And I know some of you have, because some of you do the edibles. I know that. So let me tell you what happened today, December 5th, 1933, they repealed prohibition with the 21st Amendment, which started, I think, in 1921, if I'm right. And of course, for those of you keeping track at home, the Great Depression started with the crash of the stock market on October 29th, 1929, and people really needed booze really bad. And so this turned out to be one of those things that turned out to be a really bad idea. And if you know the history about this, there were people in America pushing for this for like 50 years. I mean, everyone said, you know, if we got rid of alcohol, we'd solve a lot of our problems. So they tried it, and nobody liked that idea. That's what happened. Now, I didn't know this. There were an amazing number of legal ways to get around the prohibition of alcohol. And one is you could still have your doctor prescribe alcohol to you. As a matter of fact, apparently it's very famous. There's a prescription that was done for alcohol consumption during this time, and the prescription read, I wrote this down, take 3 ounces every hour for stimulant until stimulated. Yeah, you need stimulation. So here, try this. You try this stimulant here, right? That'll work. And another thing happened today, too, and I'm going to spend a couple minutes talking about this. It's the flight of the disappearance of Flight 19 over the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida on December 5th, 1945. Now, you've probably heard about this. You can turn on any sort of damn documentary on the History Channel or the Travel Channel, or like my friend likes to call it, the Bigfoot Channel, and you will hear about this. So what happened was, I want to make sure I get this right. I do not want the Fort Lauderdale Naval Air Station. A flight of 5 airplanes took off, and they were, let me see, what were there? They were TBM Avengers, torpedo bombers. It was a routine training flight. So you got a guy, and the guy's name's Chuck Taylor, if I'm right. His 4 students, they took off, and it was basically a practice bombing run. They dropped blank bombs on a target in the ocean, and we're supposed to come back. It was very simple. Routine thing, and the reason it was called Flight 19 is it was the 19th training mission of that day. So 18 groups had already gone out. This was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they left, and they dropped the bombs on the target, and something from that point on, the whole thing gets really weird. Nobody really understands what happened. The Taylor, the flight commander, says that both the compasses he had in his airplane, and you know, it's 1945, they don't have a lot of shit, right? So every airplane has a backup compass, so both of his compasses went goofy, and he could not figure out which direction to go. And apparently the other 4 airplanes reported the same thing. None of their compasses were working. And so at that point, they were kind of guessing, and basically Taylor guessed wrong. I mean, we know that pretty much for a fact. Instead of coming back to shore, they went the other direction out to sea, but they didn't know that. And the weird thing is, you know, it's always been presumed that these planes crashed and ran out of fuel and crashed. But the thing is, no wreckage was ever found of anything. And now here's another thing, weird thing that happened too. So they sent a flight out to try to find them immediately. This is not a search mission. This is a rescue mission. They send a flight out, and what kind of airplane was it? It was a PBM Mariner flying boat that got lost too. That they lost contact with that too. So we had 6 airplanes on 2 different flights that disappeared without a trace. It's really weird. And then I just read this today. I did not know this. I've read quite a lot about this because, you know, I'm kind of obsessed with this shit, you know. Taylor, at the pre-flight briefing before they left, which, like I said, was a routine training mission, he told the group he did not want to go. And no one understood why. That was apparently extremely out of character. This guy was always gung-ho to do anything and everything. And he said, I don't want to go. And they talked him into going. And this is what happened. The whole thing is very, very strange. So you have 6 airplanes that presumably crashed, and there's never been a shred found of any of them. And there was even, I know this is really weird, they found, just a couple of years ago, in the ocean, they found five Avenger torpedo bombers in a group that on the ocean floor, and they thought, oh my God, we finally found them. It wasn't those airplanes, you know, and who knows, why the hell were there five down there? But they checked the serial numbers, and no, those, they were not the same airplanes. So I don't know, who knows? Anyway, that happened 78 years ago today. So it's one of the weirdest things in aviation, and basically started the kind of the lore, the mystique of the Bermuda Triangle, which is now famous. Now, you know, there's a lot of people say the Bermuda, the Bermuda Triangle is bullshit. But I have to tell you, you know, to this day, if you fly into Miami from certain directions, pilots still fly around it. No one to this day, commercial pilots do not fly through this. So, you know, I don't know. What do you say, you know? Okay, so, all right, so, you know, what else happened today? This is in real time now. So, you know, there's this conference going on in Dubai, and it's called COP28, or COP28, and that stands for the Conference of the Parties. It's a climate change conference put on by the UN. It's running through December 12th in Dubai, and this is what I did not know. 97,000 people are at this thing. 97,000. And a climate change conference. What? 97,000. There's several countries that send thousands of people. And not only that, virtually everybody supposedly flies in on a private jet. It's like, oh yeah, that's good for the environment. Let's do that, you know? Now, oh, and I'm going to bring this up too. I usually do not announce this stuff ahead of time, but I have a confirmation. I wait till we actually have the interview scheduled for a date. I don't. Mark Morano from ClimateDepot.com, he's going to be coming on. He's agreed to come on the show. We've not set a date yet, but he's a big-time guy in the climate denier business. He's on CNN and Fox News all the time. You've probably seen this guy. He was just on Fox News a few days ago. And him and I are going to talk about how climate change is bullshit, because climate change is bullshit. And I told him, and I've told everybody who listens, I have two missions with this program, other than to make money, of course. And that is to give voice to a lot of guests, a lot of interesting people that I want to bring to you. So that's the primary thing. And the second thing is to try to show the world that climate change is bullshit. There's never been a bigger grift put upon the American public than this. And, you know, here's the deal. And I'm watching John Kerry, this moron. You know, he's on television over there. Oh, and by the way, if you caught this, he supposedly, apparently, like, broke wind in the middle of some conference. It's like, this was on television. And I just want to point this out. There's a lot of links to a lot of video here. And this is Larry O'Connor from Town Hall Media. He said about Kerry farting during the conference. He said he should lose his job immediately. John Kerry farted. Yeah, but no, that's not when John Kerry should lose his job. John Kerry should lose his job because he's a moron. So he's talking to some interviewer or something, and he says, you know, this has nothing to do with politics. He said, I swear to God, we do not take politics into account there. This is entirely based on science. Well, here's the deal. If it's based on science, it shouldn't be happening. You're either a moron or you're lying. And actually, I think it's the former. I think he's stupid. I really do. I don't think... I was looking into this guy's background, his biography, last night. Because I've been poo-pooing. I mean, I honestly think this guy's one of the single stupidest people in Washington. And I didn't realize. I've always said, you know, his great talent was marrying rich women. Well, he's been married twice. I didn't know this. I thought his first wife was wealthy too. She wasn't. Only his current wife, who belongs to the Heinz food processing fortune, she's wealthy. But what I didn't know is Kerry comes from a very rich family. He's a trust fund baby. He's always been wealthy, you know. And the other thing I found out is that, you know, so he won. He was in Vietnam, won tour. Matter of fact, he was only there for like 7 months. But he did win. He was awarded a Silver Star and a Bronze Star for heroic actions. And apparently they really were. But you know, when he ran for president, there's a whole bunch of people who served with him who came out against him. And I don't know what's true or not. There are other people who served with him at that time who said these people, they were called Swifties at the time, nothing to do with Taylor Swift. This predates her. This is 2008. Or I'm sorry, 2004. A lot of people said those Swift boat guys were lying, and I have this strange feeling when I'm reading about, I think that when this guy was young, if not now, still, he was just a freaking prick. I think they hated his gut. The guys who were underneath his command hated his guts. That's what I think. I don't know. Just a feeling I got reading between the lines. Your mileage may vary. You know, I don't know, you know, but I just think, you know, I do not think he was well-liked. I just think he's probably just come up as a rich asshole. And, of course, that's what he is. That's what he is now. He's a very, very rich asshole. It turns out if he had been elected president in 2004, he would have been the third richest president in history. The guy, I mean, and so he's going on and on about the science. And, you know, that's why I'm doing this, is because I talked to Patrick Moore. I'm going to talk to Murano now. There are a couple other people I'm trying to get on the show who are very famous, really bad. There's no science to this. It's complete bullshit. Now, if you didn't watch our episode with Patrick Moore, and it was the single most watched episode of the show so far. And I think we're on episode 56, I think. So we started on July 31st. It's the single most watched episode of the show. So this is what Moore said in retrospect. First of all, this is the biggest single complaint. This is like my complaint about economics. That is what I call the static pie syndrome. Now I'm talking about economics. I'm not talking about climate change. The single biggest misnomer about capitalism is that there's a static pile of money and that if I get more of it, somebody else is getting less. And that is not the way it works. The pie grows and shrinks depending on what kind of labor we got going on and how many loans banks are giving out. That's what it is. There's no, it's completely elastic. If I have more money, that just means that I have more money. It doesn't have to do with anybody else. In and of itself, has no effect on anybody else. Now, granted, there are people who are living in poverty, but my point is, they're not living in poverty because I might have more money than them, or, you know, a bigger slice of the pie. It's not a static pie of money. Now, here's the other thing about climate change, the giant misnomer, that carbon dioxide is pollution, and that's complete, utter bullshit. But as a matter of fact, you know, if you listen to my interview with Patrick Moore says no in certain terms. No, we need. It's not just that the planet needs CO2. The planet does better when there's more CO2. It's the opposite of what the climate change people are pushing. And then there's the other thing too. This is a theory, and Moore even said this. He said not everybody subscribes to this. He does, about the fact that the cause and effect thing here is completely wrong. And that is people, you know, the climate change crowd thinks, well, more CO2 leads to higher temperatures. And Moore said, no, it's the opposite. Higher temperatures lead to more CO2. He said they have nothing to do with, you know, it's the opposite cause and effect. And then the third thing is, you know, and this is, you know, the thing about leftist ideologies, there's always a kernel of truth to everything they're talking about. Here's the kernel of truth on China and climate change. The temperature of the world has gone up in the last 300 years. I don't know of a single scientist who disputes that. The temperature of the world is rising. But like Moore said, for the first half of those 300 years, there was no industrialization on the planet. And the temperature rose anyway. And he also talks about, and I can never remember the name of this. There's a name for this effect. It starts with an M. It's named after a Russian scientist. I forget. I gotta look to someone and remember the stuff so I can talk about it. That the reason temperature varies on Earth, or that the temperature rises and falls globally, is because there's an effect that the solar system puts on the revolution of the Earth around the sun, which is similar to what the moon does with the tides on Earth. And it has mostly to do with the two major planets, Jupiter and Saturn. But actually, the entire solar system has this. So anyway, the orbit of the Earth around the sun wobbles depending on what's going on and where the planets are aligned in the solar system at any one time. And that is the reason that the temperature goes up and down. That's the reason. So, you know, this, it's, I mean, I can't stress this to you enough. It's all complete, utter crap. And they're, you know, so, you know, and so, and the thing is, I mean, you see, you got 97,000 people that astonished that, and they all, every single one of them flew a private jet there. How, even if you're going to, you know, if you're talking about 10 people to a jet, you're still talking about 9,700 jets who fly, and it probably is way more than that, you know? It's unbelievable. We're going to talk to our guests here tonight, Jennifer Oliver O'Connell, and we're going to run now the really crazy bumper that makes us look really professional. Are you ready? Hey, Jennifer, can you hear me?
Yeah, Jim, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yeah. You're looking glorious.
Thank you. Thank you.
We haven't talked for a while. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Doing all right. Relocated to another state.
So, yeah. I know you're in Alabama. I couldn't remember where. Where in Alabama are you?
In northern Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. How's that working out?
Working out fine.
I saw the little video of you and your dog. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our dogs are definitely enjoying the southern life.
Yeah. Sure. Maggie handled it. Maggie's not young either.
No. Not at all.
Hey, Jennifer, let me start out right here. Right here. So tell me, what do you think of all this bullshit going on campus regarding the Israeli-Hamas war?
We are basically suffering the consequences of letting leftists just sit up there and spout garbage to our children and indoctrinate our children. And, you know, parents send their kids off to school expecting them to get educated, and instead they get indoctrinated. And sadly, this is the result.
I don't know if you can remember this going back to our thoughts, our talks on the radio, but that's one of my primary complaints with all this, and that kind of gets lost to the wayside. And that is, for all this crap they're doing, people seem to forget they're not in class. They're not learning anything. You know, exactly. So what are you, you're paying $80,000 to go to Harvard or whatever the hell it is. You know, it's a substantial chunk of money.
Probably over 100 now, I would think.
Right. And you're, not only does your kid turn out to be some sort of leftist revolutionary, but they don't actually have any skills.
Right. Right. They have no life skills. You know, they are basically being paid to, like I said, be indoctrinated. And at least some of these companies are realizing that, oh, this is what's going to end up in, you know, in my internship or in my law firm or all that stuff. And so they've been rescinding offers, but too many people have let it slide.
I find it hilarious that the people, like this woman who was denied this job at a law firm because she took part in this, and she called the fact that she didn't get the job she was promised violence.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And this is the perspective that these people have, is that anything that you do to them is an act of violence. It's like, no, it's about consequences and actions. And unfortunately, they've been taught too little of that.
Do you see any way this is ever going to end? I don't mean the war per se. I mean the stuff going on at campus in America.
No. This is what's been embedded in, I mean, it's been a long time since I've been in grad school. Even when I was in grad school, you had not as many professors, but one or two professors who that's all they did was spout this garbage. And, you know, a lot of us tuned that out, but there are children now, we've had several generations of kids that have just sucked this stuff in, believed this stuff, and now they're just totally not living in reality, not seeing reality.
And what is it about teaching at college that made, all right, what's the chicken and the egg here? Is it that people who are teaching get attracted like people, academics get attracted to this sort of leftist philosophy, or that leftist philosophies decide to go into teaching. Do you have any idea?
I think it's a hybrid. They know it's a very easy place. One, it's a bubble. It's like a petri dish.
Yeah.
So you don't, once you get into that thought process, once you get on that campus, that's where you live. That's where you exist. You don't have to exist in the outside world. And so it's very easy for leftists to go in there and embed, you know, their personalities and their people. And then they get into a place where they can indoctrinate children and send them out into the world. And that's the result we've dealt with. That should have been reined in a long time ago. You know, half of these colleges and their endowment funds. What amazes me is that many of these colleges and endowment funds and all that stuff have been funded by liberal Jewish people.
Oh, yeah. No,
sadly, they paid no attention to it until it started to affect them. And now it's like, this is what you sowed into.
I saw a Jewish woman on one of the cable talk shows this afternoon. The word she used was remorse. You know, they have regrets about both going to these institutions and fun and sending the money, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel sad for my Jewish friends because, yeah, they are coming to the realization that, oh my God, I sold into this thinking that, you know, I was fostering free speech and fostering this, and what it was funding people who fostered Jew hatred and anti-Semitism.
Going under the assumption that Trump's going to be the nominee for the Republicans, do you think that the loss of Jewish vote for the Democrats can make a difference in the election? I mean, there's only like 2.5% of the American public is Jewish. I mean, it's not a large number, you know.
It's hard to say. I think even with the poor handling of this by the Biden administration, I still don't see people waking up and drinking the not drinking the Kool-Aid and not just voting for Joe Biden just because they don't want Trump.
Yeah,
the Trump derangement syndrome is real.
Yeah, I know. That's what I think. I mean, there's a lot of Republicans who seem to think that they have this in the bag, and I disagree.
No, you know? Not at all. Nowhere close. You have people who, again, who even who are quote-unquote Republican or conservative, who are just over Trump, and then you have people who aren't really interested in half of these candidates they're floating by. If they don't do something, I see a lot of sitting out, frankly, and letting the country go to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if Biden were to win, I've been watching videos of when he was running in 2020. He has declined personally markedly since then. I mean, you know, and it's only been 2 or 3 years. I can't even imagine what it'd be like in like 2026. I mean, if he'd be alive.
I think they're going to find some way to replace him, which is why, you know, Gavin Newsom did his little song and dance with Ron DeSantis last week. They're going to replace him with either him or, you know.
Do you think that's going to happen before the election next year?
I think so, yeah.
That'll be really interesting.
They're lining up somebody or a couple of somebodies. I hear word floating that Gretchen Whitmer. I don't necessarily believe the whole Michelle Obama thing, but anything's possible.
Yeah. Well, you, speaking of that, you wrote, it was not so much an article, but a review about, I can't remember, a guy who wrote a book about about the Obama presidency, and you basically described it as a fraud. You want to elaborate on that? Because I mean, my thing about Obama is that, I mean, just in 25 words, you know, he's a very, very charismatic guy, and his presidency necessarily wasn't terrible, but he didn't really do anything, you know. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I think it was David Garrow, actually, who is an Obama biographer.
Uh-huh.
Obama gave him access to, you know, his interviews and footage and things like that, and Garrow was being interviewed by another publication, about his recent book, and he's the one who basically said that the Obama presidency was pretty much an illusion, that he, you know, and people had been saying this for years, people on the right, some far righties had been saying that Obama manufactured a lot of his past and, you know, did certain things. And Garrow was basically giving credence to some of that, you know, and focusing in on a couple of relationships that were kind of questionable and interesting. So I'm still not through reading the book. I'm one of these slow readers, so
I am too.
But it is fascinating to see somebody who isn't necessarily on left or right or anything. He's just a biographer. He's just a historian. And he's discovering that, it seems like we propped up somebody who really was not who he said he was. It's like, yeah, we tried to tell you that, you know, 12, 13 years ago, and nobody paid attention to us.
I don't know if Obama as a person, I don't even know if he knows who he is. You know,
Good point.
Yeah. I have this thing. I got it. I know about you. You're living in Alabama, so you probably know this problem anymore, but you did when you were in California. I mean, I live here in Northeast Minneapolis. I'm probably in one of the most liberal districts in the United States. Ilhan Omar is our representative here, right? Okay, yeah, sure. Right. So I got the vast majority of my friends are liberals. They know I do this. They're either constantly giving me like good-hearted shit, or they're actually they're pissed off about the stuff I say. So, and I don't talk about this in private in my personal life. But one of my friends says, "Well, I suppose you think that Obama's birth certificate was manufactured, huh?" And I said, "Well, no, I know it wasn't because there was articles in the Honolulu paper about his birth. So because of that, I know it's legit." But I did a monologue on this about a week ago. You could fake that too. It would be really hard, but I know how you do it. You know, you do research. Newspapers from 70 years ago, where are they kept? They're kept at the newspaper office and on microfilm at the library. You change those two things, man. You know, it's like, you know, it's not, it wouldn't be that hard, you know, and I still don't, you know, I don't buy the fact that I believe he is a true American, you know, naturalized American. But still, I mean, after I stopped to think about it, I thought, well, you know, Jesus, maybe you could do that. Because, I mean, like this, you're talking, like you're alluding to here, I don't think Obama is whoever people want him to be, basically, you know? It's like...
And that's pretty much how they set him up. He became this kind of, you know, I think one writer described him as a Rorschach test.
Yeah.
Of, you know, who do you want him to be? And he played that to the hilt, yeah. As well as, you know, had some people that kind of what's happening now with this Biden presidency, people in the background running the show, you know, pushing agendas forward. And that's just what we got. You know, we voted, I shouldn't say we, because I didn't vote for him.
I didn't.
But the majority of the American people voted in an illusion.
Yeah.
Because they want it to feel like, oh, I can vote for a black president, you know. And
oh, yeah. I did vote for Obama the first time. And part of the thing was, and I think this was a lot of other people thought, I thought, let's get this this racist monkey off our back, you know? That's what I'm thinking, you know? It's like, it'd solve a problem. And then the irony...
And notice that it did absolutely...
No, it was the opposite. No, racism in America got worse, not better. You know, it's like, it's really odd. I thought, and I think a lot of other people did too, you know? It's like, you know, let's celebrate this and put the, you know, get this over with, because I thought, well, how bad could it be? And that's the other thing. Like I said, I guess I don't know. Maybe if you disagree, please speak up. But he wasn't terrible. It's just he didn't do anything. Matter of fact, I would.
He did a lot of destructive stuff. I mean, as you said, he race relations. He put it backwards instead of forward. Could have done a number of things to elevate so much. And I mean, even Cornel West. And Tavis Smiley, who remembers Tavis Smiley anymore? Both of them very much criticized Obama for what he did not do for race relations and for black representation. But he's, you know, they want to keep him as the shining symbol. But, you know, that foreign policy, that whore boy Ron deal, he was a disaster on foreign policy.
Oh, totally.
He was, won't say one of the most destructive presidents in our lifetime, because it looks like we're living that now. But he definitely didn't do any good.
And it sounds like I'm contradicting myself here, but I've always said that his single biggest accomplishment, and it's extremely negative, is that I think he normalized liberal extremism, you know?
Yeah, and that was intentional. He played a moderate, but really his background, his all of that was nothing but progressive, straight up progressive.
It's even worse than that. I think when he lays down on the pillow at night and stares at the ceiling, I think he's dreaming communist dreams. That's what I think. I read part of his book, Dreams of My Father.
Which was, according to, I think it was Wayne Allen Root, who went to Colombia with Obama, actually claimed that, who was it, Bill Ayers wrote it.
Oh.
because of certain language.
Yeah.
I don't think he wrote it, no, because you look at that one and you look at his other one, and they're just, both of them are night and day, frankly.
But in that book, he's espousing stuff that was so progressive at the time, I almost thought, is he just writing this to get elected? I couldn't believe that anybody could actually think that way. And
I think that's the problem, is that a lot of people are just like, oh, he really doesn't think that way. No, that, as Maya Angelou says, when someone tells you who they are, believe them.
Yeah,
and
well,
he was exactly who
he
presented himself to be. He may have soft-pedaled it, but he presented himself to be as progressive and as radical as he's showing himself to be now.
Yeah, well, Jennifer, I mean, think about this. I have one of your Salem stablemates from Hot Air. David Strom comes on the show regularly, and him and I are constantly talking about this, about the fact that the people on the left now, they're floating stuff that's so unbelievable that people just assume it's not happening, that it's not true. When conservative pointed out, it's, oh, no, you're just making that up, you know? And I mean, the thing about like drag queen story hour and that sort of stuff, like, who would have even thought 15 years ago this would even be an issue where people would be talking about this?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. You're bringing drag queens into your elementary school classrooms. Well, that's nuts. You know, and I have nothing against drag queens. I've worked with them. You know, as an adult entertainment, I'm fine with it, you know. But for little kids, what the hell? What's the point? You know? And that's just
they're trying to normalize what is not normal.
Yeah, that's correct. That's exactly what they're trying to do.
Normalize that.
Yeah. I don't know. Just the thing about, to leave the thing about Obama, is that even Michael Moore said that the only thing people remember Obama for is the fact he was the first black president. Even he said that derisively. So, I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Michael Moore was like one of his biggest fans.
Yeah.
So many people were. It really, I remember that time. And as one friend put it, I didn't put it this way, but as one friend put it, he was black Jesus.
Oh, he still is.
So, you know, no, he could do no wrong, at least in 2008. 2012, had the Republicans actually put up a credible candidate, because he had had a record by then, then they would have, they could have knocked him off in 2012. But
yeah,
the Republicans.
You could even make, I could make an argument that if the election had happened before Hurricane Sandy, Romney would have won, you know.
Romney was just a piss poor candidate.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we still swallowed the Kool-Aid of the Republican Party. Oh, we're on your side. Oh, this, and that's less so now. People are hella pissed, whether it's, you know, the 2020 or their lack of focus on election integrity, or just the fact that they just do not care. You know, they make it clear they do not care about the base. People who actually vote, they don't care.
Well, and there does seem to be this pull in the Republican Party from the old guard versus the new way. I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of older people who wanted to go back to the way it was. And the way it was, as far as I could tell, is that they got basically the grift from the public. You know, I mean, they're...
Yeah, that they got to collect as much money as they wanted and chose who they wanted in there.
Yeah.
And didn't actually listen to what the people want.
Right.
And every opportunity to throw, again, their base, the people who support them, under the bus. They're doing it now with the pro-life issues. I did write an article about that, that the Republican Party needs to stop blaming the pro-life movement for their failures. You know, trying to blame Ohio and this election, this recent, you know, election loss in Kentucky and all that on the fact that, oh, you know, abortion is just a losing issue and we need to pivot, we need to do this. And it's like, no, you you need to actually get some quality candidates, actually articulate what pro-life is about. If you claim you're the pro-life party, have some people who can actually articulate what that means, not silly Nikki Haley who keeps manufacturing these boogeymen about putting pregnant women in jail, or, you know, just there's all types of foolishness that is coming out of their mouth, or about a 15-week abortion ban nationwide. Stop it. Leave Dobbs where Dobbs intended it to be, put it back to the states, and let those individual states, you know, build their pro-life movements, fight their battles, work to get the laws changed, and frankly, work to build a culture of life. Because until people's hearts and minds are changed, they'll swallow anything. And what's being manufactured and marketed by the pro-aborts is, oh, your rights are being taken away. It's like, nobody's rights are being taken away. But trying to murder children that are perfectly viable babies, if they were born prematurely, would be perfectly viable, and you're willing to, you know, putting into your constitution allowing those children to die, there's something wrong there.
Oh, especially, so, I don't understand how can anybody justify what they call post-birth abortion? That's murder. I mean, you can make an argument that...
It's in the California Constitution now.
Yeah, Gavin, that's crazy.
I don't understand.
There's no other way to look at that. I mean, you can make an argument that pre-birth abortion is murder, but post-birth abortion? Yeah. And then you let me ask you something. You hit on this. Why are so many guys... And it's not just the Democrats are the same thing. Why are so many candidates for office so goddamn bad? Why do we have so many losers running for office?
I don't know. Maybe one day I'll have enough money to understand this, but these people with money, this donor class and who they choose, it boggles my mind. It's like, it's nobody that's connected to reality. It's nobody that's connected to real issues.
Yeah.
That American people, period, let alone Republican Americans care about, or conservative Americans care about. But they're, you know, they keep pouring their money and pushing these candidates forward instead of, again, allowing the American people to actually decide who their candidates want to. But then they're used to this, and you know, we have allowed it for far too long, and that's what they're used to, and they're going to hold on to their power. It's about holding on to power.
Yeah,
it's not about allowing, you know, America to be the representative republic.
There does seem to be the thing that the electorate doesn't seem to understand, that they can actually vote for change. It's like people don't seem to actually understand this. I don't, you know, I mean, the way I look at this right now, it's inevitable that California is going to go bankrupt. It's inevitable. I mean, hell, it's inevitable that, you know, the U.S. federal government may go bankrupt, but California is way ahead of anybody else. And so what happens then? And the thing is, how do you, you know, everyone's bitching and moaning about California, even the people that live there, and they never make a change. They never really, you know.
But part of the reason why change doesn't happen is, again, you get back to the election integrity, the voting laws, a one-party state that has machine politics up the wazoo is not going to get a whole lot of representation from its people. It's going to, the unions run everything. They run even the elections, the actual counting of the votes. You know, as Mark says, it's not about the votes, it's who counts counts the votes.
Yeah.
They're the ones who count the votes. And therefore, you know, elections are called 9 times out of 10 for the Democrat candidate early. Or if it's a Republican, they make sure they slow roll that and pull that out. There's a lot of shenanigans that go on. I know that from friends who ran in local school board races all the way up to the governor's office. So again, starting locally, the way elections get changed is people paying attention to what their voting laws are, what they can do, being poll watchers. It's got to start there. And people have disconnected themselves from the process. And we are seeing the results now that they've done that.
Yeah. Did you hear about the war? It was not Bridgeport, Connecticut. Was there Bridgeport in New Hampshire or something?
I think there's one in New York too. New York, New Hampshire, somewhere on the East Coast. I know where the mayor's race got overturned.
Right. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Fraudulent votes. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like the mayor was like running it like a communist fiefdom, basically. I mean, it was unbelievable, you know. And thankfully, some judge actually stepped in and said, "No, this has to stop," you know.
Yeah.
Although I think what happened, I think they're going to redo the election, but they have absolutely no guarantee it'll turn out differently. So I don't know.
They don't. It all depends again on how involved the people choose to get. And also, I mean, the lawfare works both ways. I mean, we are seeing, you know, election interference in all of these Trump indictments. It's like, if he's so dangerous, then let people decide how dangerous that he is.
No, they don't want to. I know. It's terrible.
I'm going to do your thinking for you.
Yeah.
You can't decide accurately. So we can't, you know, we just can't have him in office. No, yeah. You just, again, it's all about power and control.
We were talking about this.
We want to have power over you, and so therefore we're going to, you know, come up with these indictments.
Yeah. I mean, just last night.
Not a waste of money.
They've started this campaign to basically demonize him all over again. And now it's hilarious because he's already been president once, you know, so we know more or less what's going to happen. And, you know, and they're still trying to make him out as like the cousin of the devil. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know?
Yeah, and January 6th, I mean, the footage has been released. They are already showing just how inaccurate all of this fomenting and reporting and this manufactured premise of an insurrection is. Yet people are still being indicted. Someone who was a part of California politics, an actor, contributes to Red State Siaka. He just recently got arrested for January 6th. It's like this stuff is still going on.
Yeah, he got arrested even though he's being charged with 4 misdemeanors. No one remembers the FBI.
He was nowhere near the Capitol.
Right, and no one remembers the FBI ever arresting anyone for misdemeanors ever.
Right.
It's like it's like unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. I don't know. It just seems like people aren't outraged, but I think people are getting tired of being outraged. You know, I don't know.
People are, I guess, anesthetized to the fact that tomorrow this could be you.
Yeah.
The more they keep eroding rights, just because it's one person tomorrow doesn't mean the next day it cannot be you. So people need to get outraged. People need to start, you know, storming Capitol Hill again and demanding that the Department of Justice be defunded, the FBI be defunded, something be done for them to focus in on real crime and stop harassing Americans.
Jennifer,
this is horrible due process.
You were on my previous shows many times, but you're new here. Why don't you tell a little bit about your own background? Where'd you grow up? I got to admit, you've told me this stuff. I can't remember all of it. Where'd you grow up?
Like, that's all right. Grew up in Chicago, Illinois. So talk about machine politics. The Daily Machine was front and center in politics during my growing up years. So I got a huge education in how that works, which is, you know, and then moved to California and saw it again on steroids.
How old were you when you moved?
I moved at 22.
Alone or with your family?
By myself.
Uh-huh.
Went to graduate school. You know, been in a lot of liberal academic bubbles. You know, and liberal politics. But...
Did you come out of the womb a conservative, or did you change? No, let's. I have. Hold on. I gotta ask you.
I definitely was not a leftist or a liberal. That's for sure. What I doubt. Maybe I voted Democrat two or three times in my 45 years of vote. You know, 40 years or so of voting life. But yeah, definitely became more conservative. The older I got, the more I earned more money. And just the more that I saw the Democrat Party and their agenda-driven focus on, we're just going to divide you. We're going to stick you in these little pockets, these little groups, but really, we really don't care about what really matters to you. You know, we just want you dependent. We don't actually want to help you.
Right. I'm still waiting for somebody to do a poll of how many conservatives were former liberals, because I think it's about half, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know a ton of people who they were red pilled, as the expression is going now, you know, they were converted. I can't say that I was never leaning heavily one way or the other. I would have considered myself a moderate 20 years ago. Now, definitely not. Definitely on the conservative end.
Yeah, I was a bona fide, a full-blooded liberal boy. And my wife married a liberal man, and now he's not. And she's wondering what the hell happened.
Yeah, I hear lots of marriages happen that way.
She's been very tolerant, the fact that I do this. You know, so that's cool. Whatever, you know. You know. So, hey, why did you move to Alabama then? Or do you mind if I ask? I mean, if it's personal reasons.
We needed to retire, or at least my husband needs to retire. He's a little bit older than I am.
Uh-huh. What did he do?
He needs to retire, and there was no way we were going to retire. We were barely paying rent in California. So we were looking around for places where we could move, where we could potentially retire, maybe actually buy some property at some point, because there's no way you can in California.
Yeah.
And so we explored the South and fell in love with this area and packed up and moved.
It is people who don't come to the Midwest, and I'll include where you're at as the middle of the part, it's middle of the country. I don't think they realize how relatively cheaper it is to live here. I mean,
oh yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that's the thing.
Except for the major cities. I mean, Chicago's a mess. Illinois is a mess. I don't know how Minneapolis or Minnesota is. But for the most part, anything, you know, Middle West, Kansas. I mean, we were kind of looking at Kansas. That's where some of his family lives. But I have no desire for major tornadoes. So no desire to live in Tornado Alley.
Yeah.
Plus I need some green, and it gets very brown during the summer there. But it's getting, unfortunately, the cost of living is going up because a lot of people are realizing, oh, it's cheap here, let's move here. And they're bringing their dollars and, unfortunately, jacking up the property values. But it's still relatively inexpensive. Yeah, you could actually buy a house, a very nice house, in northern Alabama for maybe $200,000. And even the locals think that's horrific. But compared to, you can buy a shack for $900,000 in Southern California. People like that.
Oh, that's right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. My cousin moved from Fremont, California. This is 20 years ago now, but it still counts.
Yeah.
Sold his house there for $1.4 million, came back to Minnesota and bought a 4-acre lot and a brand new 4,000 square foot house with a creek running through his backyard for $250,000.
Yeah.
You know, God bless them. You know,
friends of ours who were first to move out here, retired couple and their daughter and son and grandson, they sold their little tiny house in Sunland. Again, Sunland is not it's not a horrific armpit, but it's also not a premier area in Southern California. Sold that house for a decent penny. bought two houses next to each other in Alabama.
Yeah.
one for them and one for their daughter and grandson.
And they're not going to plow them down. They're just keeping two houses. They have two houses next to each other, huh?
Right. Two houses next to each other, fully paid for. No
that's
mortgage,
fantastic.
No nothing.
It that's just, good.
They took that money and paid for two.
Hey, so what's on your radar coming up now? Is anything you're writing you want to write on, you want to write about, you want to talk about, or?
Just mostly focusing in on the abortion stuff that's going on still, because people have forgotten, oh, well, you know, Dobbs happened and it's over and we don't have to worry about it. Or you have the Republican Party trying to demonize the pro-life movement. So writing a lot about pro-life.
I gotta stop you. Did you say there are Republicans trying to demonize all the pro-life movement? Is that what you said?
Oh yeah. They want to make them the scapegoat of this election. The ingratitude of people that, you know, voted in these candidates and got them over the top. Always will write about, you know, pro-life causes, pro-life movement, focusing in on that. Of course, we have another debate coming up. I wasn't able to be a part of.
I'm not going.
We'll watch the retape on television and write some things about it.
That's too bad. Well, look, I shouldn't do this, right? You know, one of our panelists dropped out for tomorrow night. If you want to join us, you know.
Oh, well, thank you. Probably not.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
I've got other things going on.
Yeah, I know. I know. And also, thanks for staying up so late. I mean, we do a lot of these interviews pre-recorded because people don't want to do them quite late at night, but I like to do them live, so I really appreciate it. I really do.
No worries.
So
great to be here.
You know, we'll talk to you again. You know that. So,
yes,
appreciate you coming on, man.
Sure. You have a good evening, Jim.
You too. We'll see you. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Jennifer Oliver O'Connell. I forgot to tell her. We'll put links up to all her stuff on our blog. So she writes a column at Substack. She writes for Red State. And is it 1819? I can't remember. That's relatively new. When we're doing the radio shows, she wasn't writing for there. But anyway, yeah, if you want to read her stuff, especially her Substack column. It's really interesting. So she's got a whole bunch of interesting stuff going on. And I do a TV show on the internet. So I got a couple of things I want to talk about here before we go. By the way, if you want to call me up, you can go to geminite.com/call. You got this little thing down here, right here. The idea was always on the third part of the show, we would take calls, but not a lot of people have been calling. I understand. I guess, I don't know. We got a call last night. That was cool. So yeah, you can call me there. You have to go to that webpage, and there's a big blue button at the top of the screen. You push that button and you're in, and you're in the queue. So at any rate, give me a call if you want. So what do we got going on here? I'll tell you what we got going on. I got a couple things that happened here. I kind of like to talk about science news. I talked about the Flight 19 thing ahead of time because it was the anniversary was today. Just a couple of things I've noticed the last couple of days. So they have released a preview trailer for Grand Theft Auto 6, which believe it or not is not coming out till 2025. It's over a year away. But I have to tell you, here's the amazing thing: we have finally, I think, with this, it'll be interesting to see if anybody beats them. I mean, you're talking about over a year ahead. Although the trailer is actually from the game, generated from the game. They have finally cracked truly photographic gameplay, as far as I can tell. I saw this and I thought, well, shit, there you go. You know, that's been the goal for years and years. And what I saw here, I mean, right now it's almost there. If you're playing, and I'm not a game player myself, but I do, because of the technology, I do kind of pay some attention to this stuff. So, but it's almost there right now. But according to this thing, in a year... which was pretty much that was my prediction too. It'll be truly photographic. So you will basically be able. It's like you're playing or manipulating a movie, basically. I mean, it's pretty freaking amazing. And one other thing I want to talk about is there's commercials. There are commercials now that are bugging me. And first of all, there's three of them. I got notes here. For one, the first one is the commercials for TikTok, where the actual slogan is TikTok sparks good. And I'm just thinking, really, is it gotten down to this Chinese propaganda? That's really what it is. I mean, you know, it's Chinese propaganda. They're running commercials. Oh my God, look how, you know, they're helping old men and you know, and ladies with Alzheimer's and all sorts of stuff like that. You know, it's like they're pulling at your heartstrings. It's Chinese propaganda. Don't listen to these people. I mean, I can't accept the fact that people say that if you ban TikTok, you're infringing on people's First Amendment rights. That's bullshit. I mean, there are reasons we shouldn't ban TikTok. There are some valid reasons, but that's not one of them. There's no one promises you the fact that you have the ability to interact in a social media environment. That's not part of the First Amendment. It isn't. These are private companies, and always, according to Section 230 of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act of 1996, they can control what's on their platforms because it's they're private. You have no right. And that's actually, see, that's the reason all the shit happened on Twitter that Musk is bitching about and he said he bought the company about. And that is they have the right to do that. They have the right to censor anybody they want. And it's terrible, but they do. Because they're a private corporation, they run the platform. It has nothing to do with free speech at all. And you guys have to understand this. You do not have free speech rights on any social media platform. You don't. Unless it's owned by the public and no one's come up with that yet. And that never will. I mean, I can't even imagine the government trying to start one of these things. I can't even imagine it. It'd be just god-awful. But TikTok is owned by China. It's owned by a company named ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. And in China, if you're a Chinese company, you have to give a certain amount of your stock to the Communist Party. That's a simplification on how that works, but that's basically what happens. So you know you have to understand, you know, you, and first of all, get your kids off that crap. You know, I find this amazing. I've had adults that said they can't live without Twitter. No, you can live without Twitter. I'm not on social media. I'm not. The show is on social media all over the place. Me personally, no, I'm not. I don't post anywhere. No, and even our show gets posted automatically on all these social media platforms. We have it all set up. It's all automated. So, yeah. Matter of fact, I actually, and I shouldn't say this, but I made. For the first time ever, I actually responded to a post on Rumble about one of our shows. So I did just a few days ago. The first time I've ever done it. But at any rate, yeah, no, TikTok does not spark good. TikTok is trash. And you should get that off your phone, off your kid's phone too. Second thing that's come up, and I really don't care. I'm going to get shit for saying this. I really don't give a crap. There's this Jardiance commercial with this very, very obese, fat woman dancing. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, here's the deal. I have no trouble accepting fat people. I have no trouble, you know, and tolerating isn't the right word. But I don't think we should celebrate this. This woman's extremely obese, and she has no business starring in a commercial. She doesn't, because you're making a positive example of her. And although it's fine that she should feel good about herself, I have no trouble with that. And I personally am not going to give anybody crap for not losing weight. That doesn't mean we have to celebrate this and make it a positive thing either. No, I mean, that's very unhealthy. I don't care what the hell you say. I don't. To be that large is not good. It isn't. And she's dancing and stuff. They're treating her like a star. And all that only happens in some commercial where some woke company is trying to, you know, promote a different point of view. That's all there is to it. No. And, you know, Bill Maher talks about this too. No, we can't. No. Oh, and look, I'm fat. You know, I mean, this is terrible. You wouldn't even know this looking at me. I've gained 100 pounds since I got married. And I got married at 33, and so I used to be rail thin. Frankly, I was unhealthily thin, really. I was, but you get married, you get really comfortable, you start eating. That's no excuse. I'm not sitting here. That's my point. I'm not trying to say I'm an example here. I'm not. But that's also my point. I'm not an example. You shouldn't do what I did. You shouldn't, And I'm nowhere near as large as this woman. And they're trying to make this out like it's some sort of, No, this isn't healthy. Hell, I'm unhealthy. Shit. And I know it. It's awful. I tell you though, trying. When 40 years ago, I could lose 25 pounds in like 2 weeks. I'm exaggerating, but still, it was easy. Now it's almost impossible. It's like at 68. I bitch and moan about it, but no, this is not good. No, Bill Maher talks about this too. We are celebrating obesity, and obesity is not a good thing, And then the other thing that's come up recently, there's this commercial for this oil of Olay product, and I can't remember what it is, some sort of facial hydration thing, and also Botox, where they do split screen comparisons A to B. Have you noticed this? I don't notice any difference. I don't. Especially the Botox thing, especially. I don't understand the effects of Botox are so unbelievably minimal, unless you put them in your lips, in which case you look distorted, But if Botox injected into your forehead, the it's what do you? I don't understand. And women, you can talk to me till you're blue in the face. It doesn't. There's not. It's the change is absolutely minimal. I mean, I'm not kidding. In these commercials, they do these AB split screens, and I've looked and looked. I can't tell the difference. I can't. And I think that's true in real life. I don't think. I mean, a commercial, they're obviously gonna. And what the trick that you don't know because you're not in the performance business is that the lighting makes all the difference in the world. You could change the lighting and get a completely different effect, even without changing anything on the actual face. And that's how they get away with that, because technically that's legal and kosher. I mean, it's one thing if you're going to actually change somebody's facial features. Through makeup or whatever, okay, that's considered dishonest, but lighting isn't. So you can do all sorts of stuff with light. I mean, if you've been following, if you watch the show at all, I mean, it took us 2 months to figure out the lighting scheme in the studio. It's like, and I have, compared to when we started, I have so many lights going here, it's unbelievable. You don't even want to know. It's like, well, we did finally get it, and sometimes, and the playback, sometimes I still look kind of red. Too. I've been trying to adjust for that a little bit, on the on-demand stream. But yeah, so it's a big deal. But I'm looking at, and so I know they're going to try to exaggerate it to sell the product. I'm looking at these AB splits. I can't tell. They're for Botox. They're looking at women's foreheads. I can't tell. So the question is, do you want to go? I don't know. I shouldn't. It's not for me to tell you what to do, but here's the deal. If you want to go through that much expense and frankly danger, I mean, Botox is toxic. I mean, it's important to remember that, for such a minimal change, I don't know. I actually think you do way better just with the right type of makeup. I really do. I mean, you ever watch Fox News? Best makeup people in the business. I mean, they know how to. This has always been my contention too. People talk about, feminine beauty. Well, with the right makeup, you can half the women in on the planet can be made to look hot, at least half of them. Where you'd say, I don't know, maybe 1 out of 10, 10% of them are like completely hot. I know this is completely subjective. I know that. I understand. But the fact is, I mean, on Fox News, I have a friend of mine, she knows I do this, and she says, "How do they get all those beautiful women on Fox News?" Well, I'll tell you, part of the reason is because they know how exactly how to make them up perfectly for the camera. That's part of the reason. And if you listen to them in casual conversation on set, they talk about this all the time. Dana Perino's talking about the fact she's constantly talking about the fact that Kat Timpf even says, she'll say, "I look like a 12-year-old boy without this makeup." I mean, you know, she's constantly joking about that, but it's not really a joke. They know how to do it. So that's the thing. I don't understand. You know, they're pushing this stuff to try to sell shit. It doesn't make any sense to me. But you know, what do I know? I'm just a stupid old dude. Okay, boomer. You know. All right. Tomorrow, as I talked to Jennifer, I asked her on camera. You know, shouldn't do that, but still, I had to anyway because I had no idea if I'd be able to get a hold of her in the next 12 hours. We got the debate night panel. It's me, it's Tim Conaway, and Jeff Meyer. And Don Zorro said maybe at the very end he's going to call in. He's got something going on, apparently. But we're going under the assumption we're not going to see him, and that's unfortunate because he's a lot of fun. So, so we'll see what's going on. Now, the rumor has it, there's been rumors flying for 2 weeks that Trump is actually going to show up for this. I still don't know if that's true or not. We'll find out. Otherwise, I think there's only going to be three people on the stage, if I'm right. DeSantis, Haley, and I think Christie. I think, if I'm right, Vivek did not make it. If I'm right, make the cut. I'm not really sure. But we'll find out. That's tomorrow. So we're starting an hour early tomorrow night. That is assuming the debate finishes on time. It's supposed to last from 7 to 9 p.m. Central. That's 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. And we normally go live at 11 Eastern, so we're going to start an hour earlier. And Thursday I'm taking off. I'm going to go see my mom. Hi. Let me give you the schedule for the rest of the month. Next week we got a full set of shows. The week after that we got a full set of shows. Then we're taking the week of Christmas off. That's starting on the 25th Monday. We're going off. But we are going to do a show on Monday, January 1st, on New Year's Day. Not New Year's Eve, but on New Year's Day, we're going to do a show. So we're starting off the year on the 1st of January, on a Monday. We're going to start off all guns blazing. So. I need a drink of water, but I tell you what, let's just kill this now. So, because we're done. All right. I want to thank you. Thanks for watching. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. I'll see you on Monday, okay? No, what am I talking about? I'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow, an hour early for debate night. Have a nice night, everybody.